darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, Crystal, Team Flotro, Nostradamus. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introduce Chance, Uncle Adams, Nostradamus, Johnny Gunn, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Welcome to the Sunday Night Weekly Super Bowl of Political Professional Wrestling, The American Adversary, starring only top drawer talent on AM 660, The Answer. I'm Lair Adams, and folks, it's really starting to stick in my craw. Not craw, craw! What the governor of New York, Cuomo, said about not wanting no stinking conservatives in his state. And I thought, how ungrateful. When 9-11 occurred, 9-1-1 occurred, every conservative was outraged and supported the city and the entire state. Days after, the liberals started blaming the U.S., and their meager support evaporated. Still, the stupid, racist, women-hating Neanderthal conservatives bestowed their generosity on his constituency. Now, in case another tragic attack happens there, and we know it will, maybe we should let the liberals handle it. After all, they've done such a great job on the economy, Obamacare, stopping terrorism, foreign affairs, shrinking our defense, oh, and, of course, telling the truth. By the way, you may think our host is missing a leg because he leans to the right. Christopher Hart!
Tilt all the way around to the right. That's right, folks. Lair, thank you for being with us tonight. Thank you, Lair Adams. And welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. You are listening to The American Adversaries. We are live once again on our three-hour Sunday night tour. Thanks for being with us on AM 660, The Answer. Of course, you know the phone number. It's 407-774-8255. And keep that phone handy in just case you want to call in and be a part of the conversation. Or in case you want to get a free bottle of Roxy Pacifics, if you haven't gotten one, because we'll be definitely giving away some of that stuff tonight. Or in case you want to participate in our Who Said That contest tonight. A lot of good stuff going on. And, of course, if you win the Who Said That contest, you win a $20 gift certificate to Cafe Positano and some other stuff, too. But that's, of course, the best part of all. All right, so welcome to the show. As I say, we got the full house back in tonight. It was Lair Adams that you heard opening the show. Next to him is our executive producer, resident prognosticator, Nostradamus.
I'm back. I tried calling in last week and, you know, got a little bit in. But it was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Worked out great. Of course, we got Johnny Guns, our WTF news hound, in the shop tonight. He's waving at you. That's him laughing.
Wave louder, Johnny.
Listen to that wave.
And Carl Jackson, who had one of the best shows I've ever heard in radio yesterday, especially that first half hour. Carl Jackson's with us tonight.
Hello, everyone, and I am completely humbled by that. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Of course, you can catch Carl live here every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. And, of course, we've got Jeff Sinis guiding us through the ether tonight from the bridge of the Salem Communications Studios. That's him talking to you. Howdy. Yeah, I saw the rodeo on TV for a little while yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, go joke Jeff.
They're coming to Osceola soon, aren't they?
Yeah. Okay. Yes, what a day, though. I mean, I'd like to say, you know, on a beautiful Sunday afternoon here in Central Florida, but this day is kind of the day that kind of gives me the blahs.
You know, gray all day.
You know what? We're not shoveling any weather off our front yard, so it's a good day.
It's a good day, but it gives me the blahs. You know, like that other guy from New York, Merrill, the old Mayor D, going to give you the Blasio.
The man who doesn't know how to eat pizza like a New Yorker. He was using a fork and knife. knife the other day. Come on. You fold it in half, you hold it up, and if it passes the elbow test, the grease hits your elbow, it's a good piece of pizza.
That's not how the Contras in Central America eat it, though, so that's why I guess he eats it. But just, by the way, we're not really going to go this way tonight, but just a side note, did you hear about the little feud that's kind of lining up between the governor and the mayor?
Oh, this ought to be fun. Who do you root for in that fight?
Yeah, Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio. You know, de Blasio got elected promising to tax people who earn more than $500,000 in New York City to pay for pre-K for everybody in the city, all the children in the city. Well, Cuomo has to approve that tax, being the governor of the state. De Blasio can't just up and do it. And Cuomo has his own plan, which if his plan for pre-K goes into effect, it would supersede de Blasio. There would be no need for de Blasio's plan.
Yeah, is Cuomo's bar higher or lower than $500,000?
He wouldn't do that tax.
Ah, ooh.
And so, yeah, now we got a little feud in the Democratic Party. All right, we'll have to watch that. All right, but we got some other stuff to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about you don't want to get in Buddy's way. And I'll tell you what I mean by that here in just a few minutes. We're going to talk about how the Ayatollah Khamenei is in the money. That's right, the mullah's in the mullah. The mullah is going to get the mullah. We're going to talk about what didn't come out in that Senate report on Benghazi the other day. You know, something that perplexed me about that Benghazi report was that Carter Ham, the General Carter Ham, reported to Congress, this was in the report, that twice Ambassador Stevens, quote-unquote, refused extra security.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not exactly what General Carter Ham, and that is a total said, and that is a total mischaracterization mm-hmm. of what actually happened. And so we're going to go into that tonight. And I've got some information, and Carl's got some information, and I think you're going to find this very interesting, and I guarantee you, folks, you have not seen this anywhere else unless you read the Wall Street Journal and a couple of other places.
Well, did they mention the lady today that got the booted up?
Well, we'll be talking about that. Yeah. We're going to be talking about all of that. We're going to be talking about, give you an update on Obamacare and what wasn't in the plan, if you will. And we'll be hitting here and there during the night what's going to be happening the week ahead. It's going to be a busy week ahead. Nostradamus, of course, has got some of his past stories to go over with you. Got Carl's Corner lined up, WTF with Johnny. Lair's got his clothes over here ready to go. And don't forget that Roxy Pacific's giveaway. But I want to start with don't get in Buddy's way. You know, the Democrats sell themselves as being the compassionate party, right? They're the ones who are lecturing the rest of us about the plight of the homeless and income inequality and this and that and the other thing. Now, what party does Mayor Buddy Dyer belong to again?
He claims the Democratic Party.
Well, he is mm-hmm. in the Democratic Party. He's a Democratic mayor. And he is sells himself as a liberal and has had, at least in past, designs on being the governor. Now, having said that, he wants to put his stamp all over downtown, just like all the long-serving mayors have been wont to do, with perhaps the exception of Mayor Carl Langford. He didn't want to put his name all over everything. But Bill Fredericks and Glenda Hood did, and now Dyer is. He's got him a new brand-new arena, demolished my opinion, a better facility. He's got the Performing Arts Center going
he's
up
building
downtown.
Building a soccer field. That's,
I don't know what they're going to do with the Bob Carr. I'm sure that's going to find some sort of demise. And the soccer field. And that's where I want to start, because in order to build the soccer field, he's going to have to get his hands on property owned by and used by Faith Deliverance Temple. Okay, this is a church that's been on Church Street since the 1980s, and it's a black church.
It's a church with a neon cross out front, right?
Exactly.
You can see it from I-4.
It's been there a long time. They've been ministering to people in the community for all these years, and they're in the way. And the city is getting impatient with them. And there's going to be a big vote tomorrow night. The city is threatening them with condemning the property in order to take it away from them. Now, I want to read you a little something here. This is a Supreme Court decision from 1795, the highest court in the land, and I quote, "The right of acquiring and possessing property And having it protected is one of the natural, inherent, and inalienable rights of man. No man would become a member of a community in which he could not enjoy the fruits of his honest labor and industry. The preservation of property, then, is the primary object of the social compact. And I add to tail on to that, unless you are a liberal and you want your soccer stadium. When they could have put this to begin with, as I've been saying all along, they could have, in my mind, they should have stuck this thing down on I-Drive, where you have international tourists down there 365 darn days of the year, who would be only too happy to take in a soccer game because that's their sport. But no, it's got to go downtown, be a part of Mayor Buddy Dyer's empire.
Oh, with the scam that it will increase everybody's income that lives around there. It'll do so much for the community.
Well, it ain't going to do much for the Faith Deliverance Temple. Now, the city has offered the temple $1.5 million for the property. The temple has said no, and I agree with Scott Maxwell, who wrote an article in Orlando Sentinel, and usually we're on the opposite sides of the fence, but in this he's quite right. The church countered with an offer of $35 million. Not a million, we don't want $1.5 million, we want $35 million. And he was saying, you know, the city scoffed at that. And he was saying they could have asked $35 billion. It's their property! It's not for the city to say how much they should take for it. That's what the Supreme Court said in 1795. But we now live in a lawless society, thank you to the liberals.
Eminent domain.
They make it up as they go along.
Have they claimed that yet?
No,
the eminent domain card?
They're not using that. They're going the condemn the property route. You see, if they go the eminent domain route, then there are more legal obstacles they have to go through with courts and such as that. Now, actually, if the church is smart, and I think they actually are, I actually did a research project. Jeff, give me 3 more minutes, please. A research project on the building of the original arena in downtown Orlando when I was in graduate school. And what I discovered is, you know, they went in there, and that was a neighborhood that they took in order to build the original arena. Most of the people gladly sold to the city to build the arena. There were a number of holdouts, though, just like the church.
Yeah.
And the equation went something like this. The longer you held out,
the more money you got.
The more money you got. And so it was only smart to hold out against the city because the city's going to lowball you. They're going to try to stick you with the other extravagances in their budget, you see? And so the church is actually being extremely smart. And the city, in my opinion, is being extremely selfish. And exposing once again for the whole world and God to see, or for God to show, what liberals are truly all about. That's only half the story.
Now, isn't Mayor Buddy Dyer the one who said, you're not allowed to feed the homeless around Lake Eola?
Well, I'm glad you just mentioned that, because it's a perfect transition into the next little old story. Okay, you've heard about the Orlando Magic, who basically ran the Predators out of the arena downtown because the Orlando Magic run the joint.
Okay? And they assumed the Predators had nowhere else to go and no other place to play.
And God bless the Predators for finding a great place to play. And you mentioned the homeless. The Magic are in the process of buying the police station downtown, the one right there on Huey Avenue. It's been there, I believe. It's been in operation since the 70s or something like that. The police claim that they don't use as much of the building, need as much of the building space anymore, because what they have done is they have more neighborhood satellite police departments. They'll have a main police department down on the trail, which I guess maybe makes more sense because that's where the predominant majority of the crime, I believe, is committed in that, at least in that side of town.
That's where I get busted.
The Magic are going to take that building and they're going to build a big old parking garage and an entertainment complex there. Well, guess who's getting in their way? Who did you just mention?
The
homeless shelter downtown. The homeless shelter that's been there also for a long time. The Orlando Union Rescue Mission, men's shelter. They serve about 120 homeless men a night, and they have a feeding program as well. And guess where the guys line up to go into the rescue mission? Right there where the brand new entertainment complex is going to be.
Yeah, we don't want that.
Now, they were also offered some money to move their operation, and they claimed that it wasn't enough. It was in the neighborhood, I believe, of... I believe the Magic offered them a couple of $1 million for the property and another couple of $1 million to help them move. The problem is, and this is what the homeless people, advocates have been saying for years, is that's where the homeless people are.
Yeah.
If you move this shelter on, say, too far away, you're going to tremendously hamper their ability. But, of course, in Mayor Buddy's eyes, he's saying, well, the homeless will only follow the shelter.
I know. Let's put it on iDrive.
Yeah, there you go. They got plenty of open space down there. So we're going to have to watch these two stories as they develop because, you know, in the name of helping these big – and by the way, constantly the Orlando Sentinel and Democrats abuse Republicans in the state legislature for favoring NASCAR and the Miami Dolphins and this and that. Well, here it's going on right in our own little bitty community in the name of the Orlando Magic and a soccer team. Thank you very much, Buddy Dyer.
Yeah, and it all goes to big business. Like the mayor of New York, he wants to get rid of the horses pulling the carts, pulling the people around. Has nothing to do with he loves horses. They want the, where the stables are for high rises.
Mayor Dunn give you the de Blasio.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And if you really want to find out what's going on in America, check out the American Adversaries. Tough guy. Ho!
All right, and we're full underway, folks, on our three-hour Sunday evening tour. Please stick around with us till 8 o'clock, and don't forget that at 8 o'clock, Mark Walters takes over, and he'll take you till 11 with some live radio, Armed American Radio. All right, welcome back, 407-774-8255 is the number. We were talking in the first segment about how what's going on in downtown Orlando, where Buddy Dyer and his soccer stadium want to move a church out of the way so they can build their soccer stadium and are threatening the church with condemnation. They also are wanting the rescue mission who helps the homeless men in particular downtown to get out of the way so the Orlando Magic can have their big, fine new entertainment complex. And this is the, you know, the party of compassion. This is the party of the underdog. This is the party of those people who are downtrodden. This is the party of the blacks. This is the party of the homosexuals. This is the party of the women. This is the party of anybody who is anything other than a conservative, in particular a white male conservative.
Do you remember what the
city... They are your protector. Well, this is your protector in action.
Do you remember what the city did when the NBA All-Star game came to Orlando?
They pushed all the they closed off.
They put up big walls, yes. Big temporary walls, yeah. So that people visiting Orlando wouldn't have to see Paramore on their way into the game.
Yeah, and they're going to try to convince us that the Orlando Magic, with their big, beautiful new entertainment complex, is going to be good neighbors to the homeless shelter next door. Yeah. Tell me a whole nothing. I've got another topic I want to... That's the local expose on the real liberal mindset. I'm going to give you the international expose next. But before we do that, I want to go to Rick because he wants to get in on that part of it. Rick from Orlando, thank you for calling, sir.
Evening, guys.
How are you tonight?
I'm great. Better than I deserve. But I've been here for 12 years. And in that 12 years, we've had three elections on whether or not to rebuild the Citrus Bowl, build the Performing Arts Center, and redo the arena. And what happened, all three votes? They failed.
Right.
So that means that they don't care what we want. They don't care what we think.
That's
right.
They do
what they want and screw us.
That's right. And what I'm trying to demonstrate here is they don't even care what the people that vote for them want or think. Because it is these people that they cater their policies to, the ones in this particular instance, the church and the homeless shelter, the ones that they're turning their back on. Now, I will say this. Buddy Dyer has caught heat in the past about, as you pointed out, Dennis, the way he's treated the homeless.
Sure.
But now the black community is getting a nice little taste of liberal reality.
I refer to their mayor as Bloody Liar.
All right, that's good.
He doesn't do anything that he says he's going to do, and he doesn't do anything we ask him to do. Thanks,
well,
guys. Great
all right, I appreciate it. And thanks for being out there. All right, appreciate it. Okay. All right. Now I want to talk about an international situation where liberal policy is padding the pockets of the already rich and wealthy. And what am I talking about? I'm talking about the Iranian deal. The Orlando Sentinel, the Wall Street Journal, and several other publications have revealed this past week that the biggest winner, let me just read you because I think the first two paragraphs of the Orlando Sentinel article kind of sum it up best. And I quote now, one of the chief beneficiaries of this week's easing of Iranian sanctions is the country's ruler, Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. Khamenei controls a massive business empire known as Sitad that has invested in Iran's petrochemical industry, that's the oil business, which now is permitted to resume exports. Under a six-month deal between Iran and world powers, Tehran has promised to scale back its nuclear development program in exchange for the suspension of certain economic sanctions, including curbs on the export of petrochemicals, that's oil. And natural gas. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to tell you how this supreme leader, this pious Islam mullah Ayatollah, has come about his empire, because it's quite interesting. It kind of reminds me of kind of Buddy Dyer and Barack Obama. And I'm also going to, and you may have heard this already or not, did you hear what the moderate president, the new voice in Iran, the new hopeful voice in Iran, is, and I'm paraphrasing, as characterized by Senator Dianne Feinstein on the floor of the Senate this week, and I'm talking now about the president, Rouhani, said this week on his tweet. He said, in Geneva Agreement, in hashtag Geneva Agreement, world powers surrendered to Iranian nation's will. That's the new moderate voice coming out of Iran.
That's sort of like the wrestler on the top of the ropes beating his chest.
Well, the sad thing is he was right.
I was getting ready to say, he should be, because they got everything and then some. Yeah. The Ayatollah is going to get even richer than he already is, because he has set himself up to basically be the head. It's interesting, they've been playing Godfather a lot on A&E this weekend, because he's basically the Godfather over there. It's what he's made himself into. Something over here, Larry?
He took the gun, he left the cannoli.
That's right. And we'll get into this a little bit more. We got Nostradamus' Pass, Carl's Corner, and a whole lot more, folks, so please don't go away.
I've been around a lot of big, hunky, sexy, tough men. I like men like that, but only when they're brainy, like the American adversaries. These guys are sexy and smart.
And modest, yeah. Nostradamus here with the American Adversaries. A program note, next Sunday night, we will be live for all 3 hours. There's this football game going on that'll be up against us for the last half of our show. And the first half of our show, the Puppy Bowl's up against us. So, you know what? Watch the TV, turn down the volume, turn up 660 or 1520. Listen to us, watch whatever the heck you want.
Yeah, we'll do just like we did during the playoffs. Our man Johnny Guns will keep us updated during the show as to the action on the field.
You won't miss a thing.
Nah, you won't. Just TiVo it. Or is it Devo it or TiVo?
TiVo, Devo, okay. Whatever.
TiVo it.
Are we not men?
No, we're not.
All right. I want to go back for a moment to the mullah. First of all, you know, this secret deal that was done through secret negotiations, and I call it a secret deal because they have not released the full text of the deal. Now, if it's such a great deal, why would they not release the full text of the deal?
And does Congress know this secret deal?
No, unless there may be certain members of Congress who have been briefed on it, but evidently Congress says not.
Wouldn't Congress have to vote on a deal like that?
It's not a treaty. It's not a treaty. So, but and I thought great when I talked to Senator Menendez. And I still have yet to see any of the major networks picking up on this story about Senator Robert Menendez.
Don't hold your breath.
Well, MSNBC been running with it. All the figure is that Menendez was leading when it came to more sanctions on Iran.
Yeah.
And the sanctions, by the way, that the Senate was pushing were not sanctions that were going to replace the ones that just got eased up. They were going to be an additional threat in case this deal goes sour.
And you know, the funny thing is, Chris, I wonder if Senator Menendez was just, I think it was political expediency that just bit him in the butt. I think he was trying to run from his little prostitution ring and do something to garner some favor. And I think it bit him in the butt.
Well, it could, something's bidding because the feds are investigating him, as we gave you some details on the show Friday, for helping two Ecuadorian guys who basically were more or less Bernie Madoffs in their own right.
Sure.
And they ran off and left a bunch of investors holding the bag, empty bags, and they ran here to the United States, and with the help of Senator Menendez, they've been able to avoid the authorities in Ecuador. And it's taken some extraordinary work on his part, and evidently he's been rewarded, not by the brothers, but certainly been handsomely rewarded by members of the brothers' families. Mm-hmm. So how long the feds have known this, because these brothers have been here for a while now, and the Ecuadorian are quite impatient about getting them back, as you can imagine. Can you imagine if Bernie Madoff had skated off to Canada or somewhere like that? Just look what they want to get Snowden back, obviously. And so, but let me get back to the mullahs and their money. And so, you know, Valerie Jarrett must have known what she was doing here. Now, during the sanctions, now the mullahs have done just fine for themselves under the sanctions. But now that they did fine under the sanctions, they are going to do extra special fine now that the sanctions are gone. And let me tell you what I mean. Reuters did a report a while back that details the Ayatollah Khamenei's empire. It originated in confiscated property. This is how he's mainly got his empire. Remind you of anybody here locally? Only he didn't do it in the name of the city. He did it in the name of this organization, Sated. You spell that, by the way, S-A-T-E-D. Excuse me, S-E-T-A-D. My dyslexia kicked in. Sated. And what they did was they confiscated, originally it was the Ayatollah's property they confiscated. Then they confiscated Iranians who fled the country after the Ayatollahs, killed the Shah and took over the country. Well, not killed the Shah, but I mean ran him off. Then they began confiscating people who didn't like and didn't toe their party line. And so he has this huge financial, and then he started taking over banks and brokerages. He's got a bottling plant. He's got a refinery. He's got him a nice, sizable portfolio.
Now, Chris, didn't a guy named Adolf do something similar?
Well, not Adolf Hitler. Fascism is when government doesn't actually own but tells you what to do with what you own.
Mm.
In this case, they own it.
Put the hammer down.
They own it. They took it away. Now, this isn't supposed to happen under Islam, okay, but it is definitely happening under Islam in Iran. And the easing of the sanctions is going to make this guy mega wealthy, and of course that's only going to make him even more politically powerful as well. Because this is something that he is doing, something that the Ayatollah Khomeini didn't do. You remember Ayatollah Khomeini?
Yeah, Khomeini, not Khamenei.
Yeah, Khamenei, okay, is the guy now. K-H-A-M-E-N-E-I. M-E-N-I-E-I. That was K-A-H-M-A-N.
E-I-E-I-O.
Right, yeah, E-I-E-I-O. Yeah. He didn't do this. He was more true to the Muslim faith. Okay, kind of like the Pope we have now. Sort of a vow of poverty, if you will. Okay, this guy doesn't believe in that at all. And so they got him a nice little thing going on over there. Now, here's the trade-off, I believe, for Obama. And this was pointed out, this was speculated by Holman Jenkins in his version of the story in the Wall Street Journal called The Mullahs and Their Money. He thinks that the trade-off for Obama is going to be that the Ayatollah is going to kind of dial it back on a nuclear program now while Obama's still in office and kind of take the heat off of Obama. And in the meantime, get super wealthy in the process. But then after that point, all bets are off and game on again. Now, that's a nice thing to speculate. It'd be kind of nice that were happening, because that would allow Israel and other places to perhaps go in there and make sure that it doesn't start up again. But we shall see. We shall see. Certainly the rhetoric coming out of Iran, like I said before the break, where they're bragging about. And by the way, during the campaign to get elected, that this moderate president that they have now, he was saying that it's not enough to chant death to America. You got to do something about it.
Oh, that's moderate.
Yeah.
That's really moderate.
Yeah. Yeah. According to Dianne Feinstein and the liberal media. Yeah. That's a new voice in Iran. Yeah, it's a new voice, but same old. You know, it's like my barber used to say, same old, you know what, just new flies.
Hmm.
And you know what I mean by you know what.
Yeah, haircut. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it can be considered moderate if you think about it, because he didn't say you had to strap a bomb on or anything like that. He could be implying you could kill Americans by assassinating them with a rifle and making them go quickly. Iranians can be very moderate in the way they kill people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I believe our caller Rick said a while back, who just called a while ago, and that is, yeah, if Islam is such a peaceful religion, why do they have to keep killing so many of us to prove it?
I saw a great T-shirt the other day. I wanted to tell the guy, we were in Taco Bell the other day, and I wanted to tap the guy on the shoulder.
Right.
It said, "I'll see your jihad and raise you a crusade."
I saw a great bumper sticker. It was on a Marine's truck, and I was trying to get up to him to salute him and wave at him, but it said, yes, it's God's job to judge the terrorists. We're just here to move up the meeting or something like that.
That's right.
All right. It is time now for Nostradamus.
Nostradamus.
Yeah.
Predicts
mm-hmm.
the past.
Thank you, 5 Minute Professor. Looking forward to after the show next Sunday night. I'm going to be going over to the 5 Minute Professor's house. He's having a superb owl party. Write it down, spell it out. He's going to have a lot of superb owls there. And there's some football game on TV at the same time.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you, 5 Minute Professor. The stories that fall through the cracks all week that we don't talk about end up here on Sunday night for Nostradamus Predicts the Past. Have you heard of Friends of Abe?
Our Abe?
Yes. Our friend Abe Katzman, what has he done to deserve this? No, the Abe they're talking about is Abraham Lincoln, but there is a secret society. They probably have special rings and special handshakes. They're called the Friends of Abe. That is under scrutiny from the IRS. What it is it's a conservative group of actors that bucks the prevailing political winds out there. And they are receiving scrutiny because they're applying for tax-exempt status. Federal authorities presented the group with a request for detailed information because they dared to meet with people like Paul Ryan, Thomas McCotter, and Herman Cain.
No!
Yes! Now, it's a secret society because a lot of these guys are working actors and actresses and want to continue working as actors and actresses. Gary Sinise and John Voight, I am not outing them by saying their names because they're among the few. Their affiliation is public knowledge. But they have strongly discouraged the naming of their members. They even prohibit the use of cameras at group events to avoid the unwilling identification of all but a few associates. So the IRS is... They're after apologizing for cracking down on the right
this can't be happening in Hollywood because the Hollywood types, they know about being blacklisted and blackballed and all that sort of thing, right? They would never do anything like this.
This is just the flip side of that. This is the other side of the partisan spectrum.
I guess Abe won't be getting any awards at the Grammys tonight.
Poor Abe. Okay, how about this one? The most and least Bible-minded cities in the United States. This is a study by the American Bible Society. Can you guess what the number one most Bible-minded city in the U.S. is? And this means these identified as respondents who report reading the Bible within the past 7 days and who agree strongly in the accuracy of the Bible.
Las Vegas.
No, Las Vegas is number 90 on the list. They are not
Atlanta.
Among the most.
Seriously, Atlanta.
Atlanta's in the middle. No, actually, the top 10 ranking in most Bible-minded cities are all in the South. Number one, Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Oh.
Birmingham, Alabama. Roanoke, Virginia. Springfield, Missouri.
Huh.
Shreveport, Louisiana. Charlotte, North Carolina. Greenville, North Carolina. Little Rock, Arkansas.
Yeah, I love that town.
Not Hot Springs, though.
Jackson, Mississippi, and Knoxville, Tennessee. The least Bible-minded city. Providence, Rhode Island, and New Bedford, Massachusetts are tied for number one.
Is that right?
So when the fire comes raining down and people start turning into pillars of salt, they'll be in Providence and New Bedford. Albany, New York, the new home of Governor Cuomo, is number two or number three.
Is that right? That's not where you want to have your shelter, your doomsday shelter.
And Boston and San Francisco round out the top five.
I would have thought Salt Lake City would have been in there.
You would think it
is, but
you would think it would be.
That's the Book of Mormon. It's the Book of Mormon.
They talk specifically about the Bible.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah,
agreeing strongly in the accuracy of the Bible.
Yeah, that would be the Book of Mormon.
So there you go. And here's a note from Hollywood since we were just out there. Anybody remember way back in 1975, before you were born, Johnny, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. The number one song of that year. They played it all summer, and I remember it. Love. Love will keep us together.
Oh, God.
Think of me, babe, whenever. Oh, sad news. Tony Tennille and Daryl Dragon, which is the actual name of the captain, have filed for divorce.
Captain and Tennille.
They were married since 1975, which is when that song took off. They have no children. They left behind a couple of number one hits, and they're divorcing after nearly four decades of marriage. I knew it wouldn't last. And that's... Nostradamus predicts.
All right, I got a couple of jewels for you here, too. Lair's favorite businessman has announced that he may seek the Republican presidential nomination for 2016, adding that New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's prospects have dimmed since the scandal erupted. You know who I'm talking about?
Of course, the man that the man who lives under hair.
Our man Donald Trump. That's right. He's contemplating another run. It's going to be interesting next year because right now there is nobody out in front. You know, the Democrats, everybody thinks it's Hillary. I don't think she's even going to run. We'll see. But if she does, obviously she has the pulpit, if you will. But in the Republican side, there is nobody. There is nobody. So he may be seeing, you know, opportunity in his eyes. It'll be interesting, though, in the Republican primary. And I think the Democratic primary as well are going to be both very interesting. You watch and see. And McDonald's, I don't know if you folks remember, I know you folks who listen to us all the time on Sunday night, we appreciate that, probably remember, but it was several weeks ago, it might have been a couple months ago, Jeff, you remember, I know, we were talking about how McDonald's, the restaurant, had gotten away from the basics, had gotten, you know, they were trying to do too much.
Trying to please too many different people.
And as a result, they weren't pleasing anybody, basically. They weren't pleasing their new customers, and they aren't pleasing their old customers, and we were talking about that on the show, and lo and behold, I don't know if they listen to us or not, but they certainly got the message. McDonald's seeks relevance, which I suppose is the new hot new marketing
buzzword.
It's like special sauce, but spicier. You put relevance on everything. It makes it great.
And basically what they're saying is they recognize now that there's too much going on. Even their own employees can't keep up with what's on the menu, so they're going to maybe try to start scaling it back and maybe, just maybe, get back to basics and them big old profits.
Yeah, and they also claim they're going to open up 1,600 new outlets. I can't imagine that being in the U.S., but what the heck, while other chains are shrinking?
They can put them in those old Burger Kings that are all closing up.
That's right. Oh, that's a low blow, but I like it. Chris, gang, we'll be right back.
We're still in this wrestling match with
Blair Adams and Christopher Hart, the American adversary on 660 WORL. 1520 The Biz.
Don't worry, we're not proud. We'll even call it wrestling. Remember when it wasn't wrestling, it was wrestling. And we wrestle with everything. A lot of big issues here, but we have the big guy in our corner. That would be Carl Jackson himself. And he's kind of huddled up in the corner right now, ready to explode on you. Here he is with Carl's Corner.
All right. Thank you for tuning in, everyone. Listen, you guys have noticed, I'm sure, just like I have in the last, and Johnny Guns is making me laugh. Just like I know he's ready to say
Don't
something.
Don't look Johnny's face. Okay. That's all.
Right. All right. So you guys have noticed in the last few weeks, just like I have, that scandals have just become abound within the Republican Party, seemingly. I mean, it's just you can't turn around without seeing. It seems like a weekly scandal that's going on within the Republican Party. party. But there's an underlying message, and so I'm going to play a game of connect the dots with you, the audience, and with my American adversary homies right here in the studio.
Homies?
So yes, that's yes.
Not
you
homies.
Guys have been inducted
to
the Homie Hall of Fame.
Got it.
All right, so we know Chris Christie's Bridgegate scandal. We've heard of Bob McDonald and accepting some gifts or what have you. We know about the IRS bullying. Dennis just told us about the Friends of Abe. This one is not a Republican, but Chris just told us about Senator Menendez. And I'm sure you guys have heard of Dinesh D'Souza. Has become under attack.
The author and film producer.
Yes. Who, by the way, I think his documentary was the second largest grossing ever.
Right behind Fahrenheit 9/11.
In history, yeah. So that was pretty impressive for a conservative. But here's what all of these things have in common. And once I illustrate this to you, you'll say, I should have seen that all along. Okay, here's the deal. What's the underlying message of all of these scandals? Democrats want to win, and they're not afraid to use bullying to do so. Carl, what are you talking about? What do you mean? I mean, these are corrupt Republicans and blah, blah, blah. Well, let's go through the list. Let's see if you see the pattern. Chris Christie Bridgegate scandal. What's actually going on? Is it possible that Chris Christie spread his big belly across the bridge and stopped traffic and halted traffic or had his cronies do so? I mean, not spread his belly literally, but you get my drift. It's possible that Chris Christie had something to do with this. And let me be honest, I think it's somewhat likely that he knew about it. But here's the message that the Democrats are trying to send. We have to look beyond the stories. What they're saying is, watch out RNC and watch out candidates that are going to be running for office, because we're going to come after you. And they're talking about the RNC candidates. These are intimidation factors. These stories aren't just popping up out of the blue. Well, what about Bob McDonald? I mean, he's accepting gifts. He's doing this and that. I mean, he got to drive a Ferrari. He got to wear a Rolex, none of which are illegal thus far. They haven't found anything illegal thus far.
Under Virginia law, which is what applies.
Yeah, exactly right. So here's the deal. Now, you guys do remember that President Obama got to accept some land from Resco. So we do know that happened, yet we've not heard anything about it. We've not seen any indictment against the president. So this is the deal. See, Democrats can get benefits from donors and lobbyists, but Republicans, you better watch your back, and you better make sure that people that actually like you and want to vote for you and want to support you don't let you ride in their Ferraris and are not willing to give you their Rolex. Okay, the IRS story. We know about the IRS bullying, and Dennis just told us about the Friends of Abe. All right, what's going on here? Well, with the IRS bullying, it's really simple. They're saying conservatives, you better not organize. As a matter of fact, they've pretty much made it legal to be able to intimidate conservatives from organizing. The Friends of Abe, what are they saying? Oh, well, now what they're doing is they're reaching into the media aspect, the film aspect, and they're saying, listen, you guys better not come out against us in the media. You better not influence the community and the citizens through the media. So that's what's going on there. What are they saying with Dinesh D'Souza? Oh, it's really simple. They're saying, you individual citizens, you better not give to candidates that you support. You better not get involved. As individual citizens, you better not donate. You better not get involved. We're going to come after you. We're going to intimidate you. What they've done in all of these stories is they have dotted every I and they've crossed every T. And don't forget Senator Menendez. What did they say with him, a guy that's not a Republican? They said, listen, Democrats, you better stay in line and you better not cross us. You better stick with the game plan. Otherwise, you're going to be out with the fish, just like we're doing the Republicans. And that has been this week's edition of Carl's Corner.
Go ahead, Larry.
I was just going to mention what you said, you know, as far as Republicans have to watch everything they do. We've had Congressman Daniel Webster here many times on the show.
Sure.
We've offered to take him to Cafe Positano to buy him dinner. The man will not even let us
dinner. He won't let his assistant Elizabeth come out to dinner with us.
No, no.
Because that might look inappropriate.
Absolutely.
It's not only that, he just doesn't even want to go anywhere near inappropriate.
That's like the question out there.
It's right. Like Billy Graham never wanting to be in a room with a woman.
Exactly.
Alone, without anyone else.
Well, the problem here, though, is he's forced into that position. Democrats could have dinner with anybody.
Yeah, but your point about Menendez, too, is quite well taken. We all know the intimidation they use against businesses, against Republicans, against conservative groups. But that thing with Menendez, you are right on. That is to send a signal to the so-called friends.
Yeah.
This is very much like Godfather, like a mafia, like Khomeini is running the show over there in Iran. Get in line or we're going to come after you and we're going to take what you got and lock you up or make your life miserable and you'll die a miserable soul.
And you're going to wake up with a horse head in bed with you. And absolutely, you know, it's kind of a metaphor, but it's going to happen.
Just ask Bob Menendez. It's the Ralph, folks.
A.M. Fell into darkness. A call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostradamus, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Yes, we are the bad boys of political professional wrestling, and we live up to that reputation. We're bad. Lair Adams, Christopher Hart, Carl Jackson, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns. Back behind the glass, we have Super Jeff, our engineer. This is the American Adversaries, the best in political talk. If you'd like to call in, 407-774-8255. Again, 407-774-8255. And, Chris, looks like you have here on our list, what's this, Gregory? Is it Hicks?
Gregory
Hicks. A response?
Yeah, we're going to talk about this Senate Benghazi report that came out recently.
Because the Times does it, all the movie is just like
actually, the Senate report was very much at odds with the New York Times report that we talked about several weeks ago. And as good as the report comparison to the New York Times article that Larry did, it didn't have the whole story. So we're going to fill in some of the details tonight. But you know what? Before we do that, let's go ahead and give away a couple of bottles of Roxy. If you've heard about it, you need some to put it in your medicine kit for boo boo, you know, burns, insect bites, those sort of things, scrapes, contusions.
Dry skin.
And it's also good for chronic problems as well. Dry skin problems. And
diabetes.
Exactly. People who have diabetes, you have to have some of this stuff. You really do. It's all natural kelp water, antibacterial, anti-inflammatory. I call it fertilizer for your skin because it's enhanced with vitamins and minerals, and it really is the right chemical composition to help your skin grow healthily. And Carl uses it for a beauty spray. I'm trying it for that, too. I don't know about the results so far, but Carl gets
looking
great
good
results. Yes, sir. I'm telling you what. It really is good stuff. It's just good for your skin. It's just like, you know, you want to put healthy stuff on your skin, whether you need it or not, but especially if you need it.
It can help treat psoriasis. It's extremely good for eczema, any scalp problems, like Chris was saying. I've used it. I've gargled with it for sore throats and laryngitis.
Yeah.
The owner of the company drinks it.
Yep. It's great stuff. Roxy Pacifics, you can find out more about it and order your own. And the price that you see includes shipping and handling. That's R-O-C-Z-E-Y Pacifics with an X.net. The first two callers at 407-774-8255 will get a free bottle. The only rule being you can't have already won a bottle. But if you need a bottle of Roxy Pacifics and you want to try to win it, call that number right now, 407-774-8255.
And Chris, you know, it's got to be easier to swallow this Roxy because I remember reading one time the guy that invented Vaseline used to swallow a teaspoon or tablespoonful every day. What?
Yes, he was so sold on this product. Vaseline, he was so sold on that product. I can't even imagine that. Oh, much like an oyster.
That'll grease up the old plumbing pipes for you, buddy.
Yeah, coming and going.
They call it jelly, but not that kind of jelly.
I don't think you have peanut butter under it either.
But it is factual that the stuff is that safe. And it is, guess what, a petroleum product. All right. I want to go to this Benghazi stuff because this is quite serious. When they came out with this Senate report, it was pretty widely reported in the press because, once again, the press is here to protect President Obama and protect President wannabe, presumably, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And they were only too happy with this report to report it, even though it was very harsh in its condemnation of this State Department, which was headed, by the way, by Secretary Clinton.
Hillary?
Nonetheless, they had this little jewel in it, which they saw as being valuable in reshaping the narrative, what we call the scripted storyline here, why we say politics is a lot like professional wrestling. And, of course, their narrative is the president did all he could do. There was nothing else he could do. It wasn't his fault. He didn't even know what was going on. You know, he was playing footsie with Reggie Love that
Spades.
Night.
That's what they call footsie in the White House.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Anyway, he wasn't doing what we might think that he should have been doing. And so when they came out with this report in the Senate, and by the way, the Republicans on the committee had their own version of the report, which was harsher, but nonetheless, it didn't even include what we're going to tell you tonight. There was this little nugget in there that General Carter Ham, the commander of AFRICOM, in other words, the American forces in that region of the world, had offered to Ambassador Stevens twice to increase the security, quote-unquote, and the ambassador, quote-unquote, turned him down. Well, first of all, that's a mischaracterization of what happened, a total mischaracterization of what happened. But it was done in the attempt to say, you see, without saying so, by reporting it, what they were saying was, you see, it wasn't Barack Obama's or Hillary Clinton's fault that they didn't have extra security. It was
Christopher Stevens' fault.
That's right. And the man's dead. What's he going to say about it? Well, fortunately, is it Darwin? Darwin won tonight?
Yeah, he was winner of that bottle of Roxy.
Okay, well, we still have one more to give away. If you haven't won a bottle of Roxy Pacifics, Darwin has won the first, but we have another one to give
away. That's a natural selection right there.
407-774-8255 is the number. And I apologize, Darwin, on Nostradamus' behalf. But thank you for calling. Thank you for being on listening.
I think he gets a lot of that.
The report didn't include testimony that was given by Gregory Hicks. Gregory Hicks, if you remember, we've talked about him on our show numerous times. He was the deputy chief of mission at the U.S. Embassy in Tripoli. He was Ambassador Stevens' number one. Okay, he was his right-hand man. He was second in command, if you will, for the State Department after Ambassador Stevens. And his account is a little bit different, if you will, than what has been reported in the media and evidently in this Senate report. I'll read now from Gregory N. Hicks himself in an opinion piece that he wrote that came out in Thursday's Wall Street Journal. And I quote now. The report states that retired General Carter Ham, then commander of the U.S. Africa Command, AFRICOM, headquartered in Stuttgart, Germany, twice offered to sustain the Special Forces security team in Tripoli, and that Chris twice declined, Chris, that being Chris Stevens. Since Chris cannot speak, I want to explain the reasons and timing for his response to General Ham. As the deputy chief of mission, I was kept informed by Chris or was present throughout the process. On August 1st, 2012, the day after I arrived in Tripoli, Chris invited me to a video conference with AFRICOM, General Ham, to discuss changing the mission of the U.S. Special Forces from protecting the U.S. Embassy and its personnel to training Libyan forces. This change in mission would result in the transfer of authority over the unit in Tripoli from Chris Stevens to General Ham. In other words, the Special Forces would report to the Defense Department, not state. Now, why is that important, you might wonder? I'll read on. Chris wanted the decision postponed, but could not say so directly. Chris had requested on July 9th a full month earlier almost, by cable that Washington provide a minimum of 13 American security professionals for Libya over and above the diplomatic security complement of 8 assigned to Tripoli and Benghazi. On July 11th, the Defense Department, apparently in response to Chris's request, offered to extend the U.S. Special Forces mission to protect the U.S. Embassy. And here's where it gets interesting. However, on July 13th, State Department Undersecretary Patrick Kennedy refused the Defense Department offer and thus Chris's July 9 request. This being Patrick Kennedy's, rationale was that Libyan guards would be hired to take over this responsibility. Because of Mr. Kennedy's refusal, Chris had to use diplomatic language at the video conference, such as expressing reservations about the transfer of authority. Chris's concern was significant. Transferring authority would immediately strip the Special Forces team of its diplomatic immunity. Folks, what Chris Stevens did was protect the special security people. He said, I can't take it because if I take your offer, it will put the security team at risk. So I will assume the risk is basically what Chris Stevens was doing. He was put between a rock and a hard place. He was being given the offer of take this security detail, and by the way, they will be put at harm's way to protect you, or you be put in harm's way not to have the security detail. That's what he chose. Let me read on. Moreover, the U.S. had no status of forces agreement with Libya. He explained, this being Chris, he explained to Rear Admiral Charles Leidig that if a member of the Special Forces team used weapons to protect the U.S. facilities, personnel, or themselves, he would be subject, that being the person, he would be subject to Libyan law. The law would be administered by judges appointed to the bench by Muammar Gaddafi or worse, tribal judges. So they're trying to blame Christopher Stevens for making a decision which was a worse predicament to be put in. He was being told, either put these men at risk or you take the risk. And being the man that he was, he could not see putting them at risk. So he put himself at risk. When Hicks arrived in Tripoli, they had over 30 security personnel, American personnel. By the time of 9/11, it was down to 9. Yes, Christopher Stevens wanted extra personnel. He desperately wanted it, but he wanted it done in a fashion that would be safe for the security personnel themselves and so that they would therefore be more effective in their job. How could they be effective in their job if they knew they were going to be subject to Libyan law? This has been the problem. This is why we're not still in Iraq. Because Joe Biden, who guaranteed us a security of forces agreement in Iraq, couldn't get the deal done. This is the problem with what's going on in Afghanistan. And by the way, look what's going on in Iraq. It's going to hell in a handbasket. All of our precious gains, all of the money and the blood that we spent over there, and I believe rightfully so, is going down the toilet because of idiocy. We'll go to the break. When we come back, congratulations to David from Kissimmee. He also won a bottle of Roxy Pacifics. We got some more stuff to give away. When we come back, we're going to, shortly we'll do our Who Said That contest, but there's more to this story. Carl's got some details to fill us in, so we're just getting going here.
American Adversaries will be right back, folks. You do not want to go away. More exciting chat coming up.
It's even a better day to listen to the American Adversaries. And you better listen. Don't let me come and get you, because it's going to be a blessing to teach you a lesson.
Welcome back to the show, folks. I am Christopher Hart. In the studio tonight, we have me. We have Lair Adams. We have our producer, Noster Dennis. We have our WTF newshound, Johnny Guns. We have Carl Jackson. We have Jeff Sinis on the bridge. So you are in good hands, and thank you for being with us tonight. We're talking about this Benghazi situation.
That's not the Washington Bridge that Jeff's on, right?
he'd never get here.
Yeah, but this is a piece that was in the Wall Street Journal Thursday, written by Gregory Hicks, the deputy to Ambassador Stevens at the time of the Benghazi attack. He wrote this article entitled "Benghazi and the Smearing of Chris Stevens." Carl, you had a point that you wanted to make, and then I want to read just the last little bit of this article.
No, just going back to a sentence that you had already read over, but it was one sentence as I was reading this article after you pointed it out to me that just struck me. And it was just one simple sentence that says, "Moreover, the U.S. had no status of forces agreement with Libya." I mean, they had, gentlemen, you guys probably heard of the attacks or the attempted attacks on other soldiers, a few months, U.S. citizens or soldiers, a couple of months prior. And the fact of the matter is that Christopher Stevens was afraid that if these men even defended themselves, they would be prosecuted under Libyan law. So this is what he had to deal with, he and General Ham there. So
it's like asking them to defend the embassy with both hands tied behind their back, not just one.
Yeah, no agreement. Yeah. No agreement whatsoever.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, on August 6th of that year, there was an incident. And this was reported in the Senate report, Intelligence Committee report, that on August 6th, two Special Forces team members in a diplomatic vehicle, which, in other words, was clearly marked, were forced off the road in Tripoli and attacked. Only because of their courage, skills, and training did they escape unharmed. But the incident highlighted the risks associated with having military personnel in Libya unprotected by diplomatic immunity or a status of forces agreement. As a result of this incident, Chris was forced to agree with General Ham's withdrawal of most of the Special Forces team from Tripoli until the Libyan government formally approved their new training mission and granted them diplomatic immunity. In other words, this was an example. This could happen at any time, and the Special Forces guys, if they didn't have diplomatic immunity, just in protecting themselves, wouldn't then be subject to the Libyan courts.
So even the survivors of this incident could still be prosecuted.
Right. And by the way, Carl made a tremendous remark about this in his show yesterday. This is one of the things that impressed me about his comments, and that is that, you know, we put our military personnel many times at undue risk by not providing them the support and the agreements in this case and the military hardware that they should have to do the jobs we ask them to do. Isn't that in a nutshell what you said?
Yeah, that's it, actually. Exactly. That was my frustration with seeing the lone survivor that opened my eyes to some things.
Well, you said it a whole lot better than I did. Anyway.
I can't remember what I said, so thank you.
But let me just finish up from the article here. I want to be clear about why Stevens was in a predicament, but in a way his hand was forced. I'll read now, once again, Mr. Hicks' article. Because Mr. Kennedy, this was the bureaucrat in the State Department, and Carl's got a few details on him, but he's basically a nameless, faceless bureaucrat. Because Mr. Kennedy had refused to extend the Special Forces security mission, State Department protocol required Chris to decline General Ham's two offers to do so, which were made after August 6th. He says, "I have found the reportings of these so-called offers strange, since my recollection of events is that after the August 6th incident," that's the one where the two guys were attacked and got away, "I have found the reporting of these so-called offers," "General Ham wanted to withdraw the entire Special Forces team from Tripoli until they had Libyan government approval of their new status and diplomatic immunity. However, Chris convinced General Ham to leave six members of the team in Tripoli." So in other words, he's saying that these people who were saying that Chris Stevens refused the General Ham's offer, it's a total lie. He was going out of his way to try to figure out a way to keep somebody there.
The only other option would be to close the embassy entirely. Get everybody out of there.
All right. Let me finish this last couple paragraphs. "When I arrived," this is Hicks again, "when I arrived in Tripoli on July 31st, we had over 30 security personnel from the State Department and the U.S. military assigned to protect the diplomatic mission to Libya. All were under the ambassador's authority. On September, see, that's key, because when they're under his authority, they have diplomatic immunity. You've heard about these characters getting arrested in New York for stuff, and they got diplomat. It's the same thing. It may sound bizarre, but it really is the same thing. All right? Diplomat, all were under the ambassador's authority. On September 11th, we had only 9 diplomatic security agents under Chris's authority to protect our diplomatic personnel in Tripoli and Benghazi. He goes on to say he was interrogated, interviewed by the committee, and he is as to a quandary as to why his report didn't make it into the Senate report. That's why we're going into this, because we need to know this, even if it wasn't in the report. I'll read the last paragraph. To sum up, Chris Stevens was not responsible for the reduction in security personnel. His requests for additional security were denied or ignored. Officials at the state and defense departments in Washington made the decisions that resulted in reduced security. Senator Lindsey Graham stated on the Senate floor last week that Chris was, and he quotes Graham now, was in Benghazi because that is where he was supposed to be doing what America wanted him to do, trying to hold Libya together. And Graham added, quit blaming the dead guy. Well, when you got no shame like liberals, you don't care who you blame. As a matter of fact, the dead guy is the perfect guy to blame.
Because he can't answer back.
But then thank God in this
dead
case.
Tell no tales.
Thank God in this case, Gregory Hicks can. Because he's still alive. He wasn't there that night, or he might very well be dead as well.
Yeah, he has to suffer people going after him.
Well,
destroying his reputation.
Well, obviously, the powers that be aren't too pleased because they didn't put his interview, which to me seems pretty important information, wouldn't you think?
Somebody who actually knows?
Someone that was actually there.
See, I knew it was screwy, and I believe I said it on the air. I said, this just kind of doesn't sound right, that Christopher Stevens twice turned down, quote-unquote, turned down extra security personnel. Knew it had to be more complicated than that, and it was far more complicated than that. He was only turning them down because he had to turn them down. He wanted them there desperately. That is the gist of it. That is what was lost in the media's reporting, and I dare say in the Senate Intelligence Committee reporting of the incident. Surprised? No. More outraged than ever over it? Yes. By the way, who is this Patrick Kennedy?
All right, well, I'm reading from an article from National Review Online that was actually in, I believe it was June and July of last year, but I just Googled the guy, but I'm just going to read from this article. The State Department Undersecretary for Management. This position, basically, when ambassadors, this guy is under Hillary Clinton or whomever would take...
He is like one of her lieutenants.
Exactly right, but he manages all the requests, finances, budgets, and stuff like that. So all of that stuff he manages, he reports to her.
Exactly, so he reports to the Secretary of State.
Exactly right.
Not somebody else in between. Go ahead,
exactly
Carl,
right.
Please.
So it says the State Department's Undersecretary for Management is his position title. Patrick Kennedy, no relation to the former congressman from Rhode Island, would not be the first official in Foggy Bottom one would accuse of being an Obama administration stooge. He's not a political appointee or a longtime Obama backer. He has worked in diplomatic and government positions his entire adult life.
Well,
I guess we'll have to finish up on the other side of
this. Guys, with the Libyans knowing all this... Could this terrorist act could in any way have been a setup?
Well, you'll have to tell us what you mean by that when we come back.
People knowing where people wouldn't be protected.
We have to go to a hard break right now, but folks, we'll continue this conversation. A lot more to go.
More political mayhem is on the way. You're listening to The American Adversaries on 660 WORL. If you can take it.
Welcome back. You're listening to The American Adversaries live this Sunday evening on AM 660, The Answer. I'm Carl Jackson sitting in studio with Christopher Hart. Nasha Dennis, Johnny Guns, Jeff Sinis is behind the glass, and Lair will be joining us back shortly here. But, Chris, before we went to the break, we were talking about the Benghazi report as it relates to Gregory Hicks.
Actually, you were making some points there.
Right. And Patrick Kennedy basically is a guy that's been a bureaucrat all of his life.
But let me just real quickly update, folks. Patrick Kennedy is the one who is basically behind the decision that did not allow for more security in Benghazi. He made a decision, and let me go back to the article here. Get it real quick. July 13th of 2012, July 13th, State Department Undersecretary Patrick Kennedy refused the Defense Department offer for more security, and that decision led to Chris Stevens not being allowed to have the extra security that he needed. I'm sorry, Carl.
Yeah, no problem. And what I was doing is I started digging for Chris, hoping to find that this guy was corrupt, something or another. I mean, he did grow up in Chicago, so you don't know his ties. But the truth of the matter is, he was in government under even the Bush administration, not directly under Bush. He wasn't appointed by anyone. He just held this position, and then he did progress in gain higher position, if you will, in the Obama administration. So it says here, for 6 months in 2003, he was chief of staff of the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq, and for 4 months he served as chief of staff of the transition unit in Iraq. In spring 2005, he headed the transition team that set up the newly created office of the Director of National Intelligence, and he worked in the DNI's office until 2007.
And what Blair said going into the break was, he said something about a setup. I think what he's talking about is there were locals working at the embassy. Could they have had that knowledge that they were understaffed in security and were susceptible to an attack like this? And could that be what helped precipitate the timing of the attack like that?
It could be. It's very possible. We just don't know that. That's another one of the details we don't know, but it's certainly plausible.
You think about it, 9/11, they are at their lowest level of security for the entire year.
Yeah, which,
9 out of 31.
But I think what Carl is explaining here, what he's found out about this fellow Patrick Kennedy, and by the way, it's not, when I first heard the name, I was thinking Patrick Kennedy, who was a congressman for a while. This is not the Patrick Kennedy. He evidently, as far as we know, not directly in the Kennedy clan,
exactly,
so to speak, right?
Right.
He's basically just life late part.
Yeah, yeah. With volumes. Let me just read this part here.
Sure.
In 2008, he irked some Democrats when the U.S. Embassy in Berlin cells there, not in Senator Obama's public rally. The issue is bureaucracy. This was a man that brought tons of U.S. and some Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, where he reported to her directly. So she,
And see, that there is in the key, once again, to all of this. He was one of Hillary Clinton's lieutenants. In other words, he made decisions only she could override.
Sure.
So there was no anybody in between.
Sure.
And if he had any questions, he would go to her.
Right.
Now, the fact that she was hardly ever in the office probably led to part of the problem.
Yeah, this could be true, yeah.
You're talking about sensitive information, and this goes to kind of the heart of what you're talking about with Lair, and that is that it's harder to talk to somebody about sensitive things, even with encrypted devices, when they're on the other side of the world bumping butts because she's trying to make a statement about raising women's profile around the world. A noble cause indeed, but cannot be the only one of the Secretary of State.
And
because this business goes wanting. Carl, go ahead.
No, basically, the bottom line, I think, is this. This was a bureaucrat that just did bad work. He was in a bureaucracy. He's a lifelong bureaucrat.
And we have to know, did he ask Hillary Clinton about any of this? Or did it stop with him? And if it stopped with him, why has he still got his job?
Yeah, and I believe that it's highly unlikely that it stopped with him, based on some of the stuff that I've read. I just think that's highly unlikely. He reported to her.
If you believe Bob Gates and his account of Hillary Clinton being engaged and, knowing all about all the issues and everything, you would think that someone who's engaged and knows about all the issues and everything, they would know what's going on with one of their lieutenants in an embassy in Libya, where she, along with Susan Rice and I believe old Val Jarrett, are the ones who basically nudged President Obama into the whole Libyan thing to begin with.
Rather than illustrate the ineptitude of government, Hillary and Obama decided to cover up.
Well, and what she was doing is she was picking and choosing. The different things she wanted to get into, she wanted to get involved in.
It's kind of like the Obama presidency, If he's interested in it, it's going to get a lot of attention.
Selective enforcement, selective attention.
Exactly. It's,
If it's politically expedient.
And it comes down to that, too.
And to your point about her going around trying to help women's rights around the world, I think George Bush did a heck of a lot more freeing the women in Iraq. Of course, now they're going to lose that freedom than she ever did.
Not only did he set tens of... in Afghanistan. Don't forget Afghanistan, too, by the way. Not only did he liberate tens of millions of women in that part of the world, but he also spared millions more women the horrors of the AIDS epidemic in Africa. Even old Bono gets that. Bono, whatever his name is.
Oh, but not Reverend Wright. Oh, no, because he's the one that said whites created AIDS to destroy the black man. Well, and here George Bush has done the most to save black men in Africa and women from AIDS.
I dare say if you go to Africa, you will find George W. Bush a whole lot more popular than Barack Obama.
Or Reverend
That's
Wright.
That's a great point. That is a great point. I bet you're right.
You know I'm right, because he did a lot for them, and they know it. They know where it came from. See, this is the trouble with the liberals. Everybody does have eyes and ears and can see and hear and think. Much to their chagrin.
Well, I don't know about the think part.
Well, when it comes down to your insurance getting yanked from you and your doctors and all that, it causes you to do a little thinking, whether you're used to doing that or not.
Reality gives you a little smack upside the head, doesn't
it? Sure enough does. All right. Speaking of smacks upside the head, it is time for our Who Said That contest.
Smackdown.
All right. This is real easy, folks. You know how to play this. We read a quote, and we're going to do the Who Said That contest tonight. We'll read a quote. You simply call us up at 407-774-8255 and tell us who said it. If you are correct, or if you're just the first person to guess and nobody else gets it correct, you will win a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano. And I think we have one or two more calendars. I know it's already January. It's about over, but we'll give away one. Two more calendars. A beautiful calendar for 2014. Compliments of Congressman Bill Posey over there on the East Coast.
You know, we have to get some calendars from our friends at Glow, Sunny and her gang.
Ooh, not a bad idea.
I'd like to get
a Glow Girl.
I'd like
calendar.
To get my hands on the calendar.
The calendar, yeah. You just want a date.
We'll talk to her about that later on when she calls
in. That's right.
She's
going to join us at the top of the next hour. Tuesday night is going to be the State of the Union address.
State of the Commune.
Oh, boy.
There you go. And I've got a great quote here tonight, one that I bet you will not. You should hear Tuesday night, but you will not hear Tuesday night. So if you know who said this, give us a call, 407-774-8255. Who said, "I must tell you that the State of the Union is not good"? If you know who said that, 407-774-8255. I told you Obama should be saying it, but won't be. Who said...
All right, so you gave that away. It wasn't him.
Who said, "I must tell you that the State of the Union is not good"?
Of course, he would never admit that.
I would
Barack.
Say Obama told... I mean, Michelle Obama told that to one of her girlfriends when she asked him, "Girl, would you tell me what's really going on in the White House?"
Would that be Jane Fonda?
Exactly.
Would that be Jane
yes.
Fonda, Carl?
Or the girls out there to Hawaii.
You know, what a slap in the face. Why Michelle Obama would slap our military, our ex-military, any Vietnam veteran in the face those statements.
Well, like I said the other day.
I don't even know how to take that.
And it is to get us angry.
Looks like it's working.
So, well, the thing to do, like I said the other day, though, is hear it, remember it, but don't get angry. Just get even. And what I mean
channel
by
it,
that
funnel
is
it.
Funnel that into the election process. Let's show these liberals what for. If you know who said, "I must tell you that the State of the Union is not good," give us a call, 407-774-8255, and win that $20 gift card to Cafe Positano, the finest Italian restaurant in all Central Florida. You know, guys and gals, Valentine's Day is coming up fast. I mean, it's going to be here before lickety-split, before you know it.
And Pasquale can help you out in two different ways.
That's right. You can, first of all, go down to Lake Mary Jewelers and get that special someone, that very special gift. And
Custom-made or estate jewelry?
He and Carl Scarlotta have got a great store going over there. It's at the corner of Lake Mary Boulevard and Lake Emma Road, just off of I-4, just on the east side of I-4 on Lake Mary Boulevard. And you go over there, get that special gift. left and then make a reservation at Cafe Positano in the dining area back there to present the gift in one of those little private booths they have.
Pop that cork and pop that question.
There you go.
Pop which cork there, Dennis?
Whichever cork is around.
Okay.
It's all good.
Anyway, Cafe Positano's phone number to make those reservations is 407-774-8080. That's 407-774-8080 for Cafe Positano.
Folks, I know you don't believe in time machines, but this show must be one. We're just about to finish out the second hour. One more hour to go. I can't believe it's gone by so fast.
Seems like we just got here. Yeah. We'll be right back.
Hey, folks, this is pro wrestler and WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Doug, and I listen to the American Adversaries. Tough guy.
Yeah, it's our massive the hour tour on this Sunday night, American Adversaries Classic. Coming up in the next segment, we are going to talk to Patricia Summerland, our friend Sunny, the California Glow Girl. But for now, we're going to talk to Christopher Hart.
Ah, we'll be talking for the next, that's right. And don't forget, Mark Walters is going to pick it up at 8 o'clock when we hand it off to American Radio. All right, we don't have a winner yet. A guest to put up on Fred on, so try. For all those, you might win. I must distinguish as good. Who said that? You would think that it would be maybe a president or somebody that does something to do with politics,
does
right?
Does it have to be a president? Could it be anyone?
I would suppose it wouldn't have to be.
It could be a Speaker of the House. Could be just a commentator.
Could be any old.
Be Christopher
Olden. You not know that before 7725. In the meantime, yes, Tuesday is going to be the State of the Union night. By the way, Nostradamus, who is going to do the GOP response? Did you get that?
I knew you were going to ask me, and she's a congresswoman. She's a Republican. She is a mother of three. One of them is a Down syndrome baby. And her name is?
Kathy McMorris Rogers from, you would ask me that, yeah. Washington.
Yeah. Well, Washington State, yeah. Well,
from Washington State?
Yeah.
Okay.
She's going to do the Republican response.
That's right. And Mike Lee is going to do the Tea Party response.
And evidently Rand Paul is going to do the Rand Paul.
Well, why not? He gets his own again.
So, anyway, tonight, and the president is already by the, it's once again, the media types this morning were all sort of playing down what to expect out of this State of the Union. Lower the bar, but I think that reality is hitting home. And Peggy Noonan, in her article for the Wall Street Journal this week entitled The Sleepiness of a Hollow Legend, I think is really kind of on to something here. She's basically saying that Barack Obama has lectured it to us so many times that we're basically sick and tired of it. That's my words, but that's the gist of what her article is.
Also, he has no head.
Right, the Sleepy Hollow Legend. And in a separate article, in separate news reports, Barack Obama's State of the Union speeches, their viewership and listenership has steadily gone down over the years. Steadily gone down.
Because most people who like his message have heard it. And people who don't like it hear it every day.
His last State of the Union address, last year, after his overwhelming reelection.
After the immaculation.
Got lower ratings than Bush's last State of the Union address. And presumably tomorrow's will be even worse in terms of the ratings. And it's no doubt. The problem that the president has, though, is let me just read a little bit of Peggy Noonan. She says, talking about the president, she says, nobody's listening to him. For instance, she says, he gave a speech on the National Security Agency, this is just the other day, that bitterly contested issue. Pew Research found half of those polls didn't even know he gave the speech. National Journal's Dustin Voles wrote that Americans greeted the speech with collective indifference and broad skepticism. Of the 1 in 10 who'd followed it, 1 in 10 who'd followed it, get this, more than 70% doubted his proposals.
Mm-hmm.
He's got no credibility anymore, is what she's saying here. Doubted proposals would help. He goes, I'm looking about speech too. The president's up to with Obamacare, not a hazy, but a fact. People now at least admitting and disastrously executed. It was supposed to make life better by expanding coverage. It has made it worse by throwing people off coverage. And as we all know now, but did not last year, the program was passed with only the aid of a giant lie. Now every one knows if you liked your plan, your doctor, your deductible, you can't keep them.
I'm sure the president is going to point out, however, that this is all George Bush's fault. Well, actually, I predict he's not going to mention the name George Bush at all in his message.
Exactly.
But I'll bet you, not once, not twice, but thrice, he will refer to what a bad economy he inherited and what a bad situation he had to clean up in the course
thrice.
Of
thrice. You think this is the Garden of Gethsemane?
Thrice.
Well, okay.
Well, what Peggy Noonan is saying is nobody's going to hear it anyway, so it's not really going to matter what he's going to say. People are tuning this president out, and they're doing it now in droves. You know, droves. If he stands up there in his regular condescending attitude and people are watching this with Obamacare now fresh in their minds, it's going to make him look really worse.
Can we put Joe Wilson in the back of the room just to say you lie after every sentence?
Yeah,
or do we even need that anymore?
Well, listen, I'm encouraged for two reasons. One is because people are finally hearing my advice, I believe, when I say don't listen to Barack Obama because it's like giving a drunk a drink. And then also what's happening is I actually heard a snippet of Sean Hannity's show the other day, and there was a black man that called in, and I think I remember this battle before Thanksgiving. He was telling Sean how great Obamacare was going to be.
I know what you're talking
okay.
about.
Okay, and he and his friends have just gotten either penalized or they've had to
exposed to the realities of Obamacare.
Exactly right. So he was calling in to apologize. So I'm like, hey, praise God. You know what?
Stand-up guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So hopefully he won't vote Democrat in 14 and 16.
This, you know, and I keep harping on this, but this is the point I was trying to make in our original edition of the American Adversaries, 169 episodes Sunday night ago.
Wow, that's more than 3 years.
Sure enough is. And that was that Obama was really a gift in disguise, if you will. The packaging wasn't all that great. You know, it doesn't taste all that good, if so to speak, but was a huge gift to the country nonetheless. It was, okay, you think you want to be liberal? Let me show you liberal, God basically said. Here's what liberal is. Now, if that's what you want, you can have it.
Yeah, isn't it a shame, though, that the first black president was a liberal black president? If we had gotten a conservative black president in there, so many things would be so different.
And that I think you are absolutely right about that. And in an odd sort of way, that reminds me of a point I've been wanting to make here, and I'm glad this has come up on Sunday night because Carl is here. And that is that I think that the liberals are really the ones who are racists, and they demonstrate that with Barack Obama. In other words, I think that they are the ones who thinks that blacks aren't capable, and Barack Obama is basically an example of that, and they need the white liberal to help them out. Isn't that the whole idea behind the white liberalism?
Yeah.
Is that blacks need us?
Yeah,
if they're there for the rescue.
Right, yeah. And Barack Obama is just another example of that to them.
To them, Barack Obama is the best they can do.
He's so clean and articulate.
And so, they can do so much better.
That's why they don't really hold the man to account, you see? They don't expect anything more out of him. Carl?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I say that the underlying theme of the leftists in this country is basically they look at their voters and they say, here's the deal. You're absolutely nothing without me. This is what they tell their constituents over and over and over again.
Yep. I remember an episode of All in the Family where you remember Lyle, right?
Lionel,
right. You know, he was the neighbor and he was the friend of Gloria and Meathead. Well, he was over one night with his parents, who I believe went on to become
the Jeffersons.
Right. They were over there and they were playing this brand new game that Gloria and Michael had brought home. And it was a game about politics and liberals and all this stuff. And at one point in the game, Lionel was supposed to lean up against Michael, because Michael was the liberal, and he was there to support Lionel. And Lionel kind of got his gander up. He said, I don't need to lean on you. I don't need you. And Michael was just, he couldn't understand this.
That
he was apoplectic. Oh, no, you need me. You have to have me. You wouldn't be anything without me. You see what I'm saying?
Hmm.
The liberal thinks so highly of himself that he thinks lowly of everybody else, including the black person.
And who inferior they need to bring up. And
who wrote that
up.
Episode? One of the most liberal writers in Hollywood in the 70s, Norman Lear.
Every now and then he stumbled onto something great. I mean, every now and then the show really kind of got it right. And that was an episode where it did. And Lionel, he didn't lean against Michael. And Michael just couldn't stand it. It ended the game, and Archie was having the time of his life with that, of course. But, all right, let's go to our phone lines now because we have some guesses for our Who Said That contest. These folks think that they know who said, I must tell you that the state of the union is not good. Let's first go to Mark from Orlando. Mark, thank you for calling tonight. Who said that?
I believe that was Abraham Lincoln.
No, it was not Abraham Lincoln.
He sure could have said that, especially in his second term.
As a matter of fact, this person, and I'll give this hint out, was a president, is the only president who has ever said this in a State of the Union address. But it was not Abraham Lincoln. Excellent, Mark. Mark, we appreciate you calling. By the way, Mark, have you got... Hold on, Jeff, give me another couple minutes.
Oh, we can't. We're heartbreak.
Oh, heartbreak. We got to go to heartbreak. Mark, have you gotten a bottle of Roxy Pacifics yet?
Yes, I have. Thank you.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you for calling tonight. If you figure it out, call us back. We have two more callers. We'll go to them in the next segment.
Callers, do not go away. One of you may have won tonight's prize. However, we'll check on that. Where are the American adversaries? Again, it is a heartbreak. We have to go to a station identification, but we will be back.
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They team with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
All right, I hope you're feeling good, folks. We're feeling good, and we're here with you for the next hour. And just in moments, we'll have Sunny, our California glow girl, going to join us. In the meantime, you are listening to the American Adversaries live on AM 660, The Answer. I am Christopher Hart, along with Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, Carl Jackson. We're all live in the studio. Jeff Sinis is on the bridge, so we're in good hands. Let's go now to Roy from Altamont Springs. And by the way, please stay on the line, Douglas and Laura. We will go to you. But Roy thinks he knows who said... I must tell you that the State of the Union is not good. Roy, or who said that?
Gerald Ford.
It was Gerald Ford.
The famous golfer.
Yeah.
That was easy.
What's that? I'm sorry?
Knew it wasn't Quentin or Bush, though.
No, it was. It was Gerald Ford. He said that in 1976.
Very good.
As a matter of fact, that's right. Have you ever been to Cafe Positano?
No, not me, but I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. We appreciate you being out there, Roy.
Right.
All right. We'll get that right out to you.
And watch out for flying golf balls.
and Gerald Ford walking downstairs. let's go to Douglas. You got it right as well. And Laura, stay on the line. Douglas, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Hello.
You got it right, too. How'd you know that?
I follow politics a lot. I love you guys. I think listening to you, the passion you guys show, it doesn't sound like a talk radio show. It's guys talking like I would talk to my friends. So I follow it a lot, but I actually think Ford said it in 75, not 76.
You know, you actually might be right about that. I thought it was 76, but I'll concede to you it probably might have been 75. But thank you for your comments about that. That's actually what we try to do. We try not to be a quote unquote talk radio show, but we try, you know, to provide entertaining, solid, great information.
I would like to nominate Douglas as the perfect listener call of the day, please.
Hey, Douglas.
Well, thank you.
We're going to go ahead and send you a prize pack as well. So thanks again.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, and I do appreciate you guys. Like I say, it's not someone sitting at a microphone talking at you. It's listening into a bunch of guys talking about what's real. So
all right.
I enjoy listening to you all the time.
Thank you so very, very much. We appreciate it. And certainly I hope you enjoy your visit to Cafe Positano. Maybe we'll run into you over there.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And let's go now. Thank you. And let's go now to Laura from Apopka. And Laura, you also got it right. Did you know it? Or did you?
Yes, sir.
Hi, how are you tonight?
I'm well, thank you.
Hi, great. How did you know that? You just knew it as well, like Douglas and Roy?
No, actually, it was on the news this afternoon.
Oh, it was. Okay, yeah, all right.
They were showing famous presidential speeches that will be remembered, and this one came up because it's never been said before and has never been said since.
That's right, exactly right. Although this Tuesday it would be apropos if it were said, but...
they said that too.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to be putting any money on it. Laura, have you ever been to Cafe Positano? I see you're from Apopka.
Yes, I have.
Well, would you like to go back on us with a $20 gift card in your pocket?
I sure would.
All right. Well, we're going to, since you had the right information, you guys all called in at the same time. I mean, obviously we had to take one call in front of the other, but the lines lit all up. So we're going to declare all y'all winners and happily do so. And thank you as well for listening to our show. We really appreciate you.
And when will
Thank you so much. When
will we be there this week, Chris?
I believe we're going over Wednesday this week.
Wednesday night. Okay, maybe we'll see some of these people we gave coupons to.
All right. And by the way, they'll also all be getting these great new calendars, compliments of our great friend Congressman Bill Posey. All right. Our good friend Tim is on the line, and he's disputing something here. Hey, Tim, what you doing tonight? Are you up at Cafe Positano?
No, I couldn't make it tonight. I had to work today.
Okay, all right.
You mean you work?
Yeah, I do, once in a while. I want to dispute the answer.
Why is that?
It was just last Thursday, I was having dinner with a group of friends.
Yeah.
And I said to Pasquale, the State of the Union thinks.
So Tim from Castleberry would be the right answer.
Yeah. To me, would be the right answer.
You must have been sitting at that table of ruffians the other night when we were trying to have a nice, quiet conversation in there.
No. I overheard that conversation. You were talking to Pasquale about the state of the onion, and that's what you were saying stinks.
I was kind of glad that Johnny Guns brought his brother and his friend.
Yeah,
because that was the first time he wasn't dancing on the tables.
So. Well, people keep giving him dollar bills. And,
all right, well,
great show, guys. Right. I have been listening. So.
All right, well, thank you, Tim, and appreciate it.
I'll keep in touch.
All right, we'll see you over at Cafe Positano real soon.
Yeah, I'm not sure about Wednesday, but I'll do my best.
Okay, all right, and your Madison Rising CD will be in the mail to you tomorrow. Okay. All right.
Good, super, thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you, and thank all those callers who called in and all the great comments as well. And we'll be doing this, of course, next week. And don't forget, we still give away Roxy Pacifics on the show, too. So who knows? We might do that again tonight, but I know we're going to be doing it again next Sunday night.
Well, you're free and easy with your winners, aren't you?
Hey, it's on the rocks,
that's
man.
That's right. Or on the Pasquale, depending what the prize is.
That's right. Of course, on the rocks is our great friend Ed Roxy of Roxy Pacifics. That's R-O-C-Z-E-Y. Pacifics with an X. Okay, I don't want to make this lady wait any longer because she might pick me up and slam me down.
She could do it.
You'd like that.
I would like it. That's right. Of course, ladies and gentlemen, we are now being joined by Sunny Patricia Summerlin, our California glow girl. Hey, Sunny, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing wonderful, guys. How are you guys doing out there in sunny Florida?
Well, we're doing
it's
great.
Rainy Florida
but it's
tonight.
It's not too sunny tonight. What's it like in L.A.?
It's certainly not sunny here, only for me. But, you know, yeah, it's really cloudy. It's probably around, I don't know, 63.
Oh, wow.
Not looking too good, but we're loving it here.
Well, you, of course, you need the rain, but do you think it's going to rain on the red carpet tonight? Tonight's the Grammys, right?
I know, but good thing it's tinted for everyone, of course.
Yeah, okay.
So they're going to be prepared, but we need the rain, so I'm sure they'd all be pretty darn happy, too.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I hear Justin Bieber's not going to be there tonight. Isn't that sad?
Darn.
Did that?
You know?
did his travails here in Miami Beach get any play out there in L.A.?
Oh, that's all we've heard, guys. Yeah. You know, I'm sure he's infamous there in Miami. I say ship his little bratty butt back.
Yeah, he can stay in Panama.
Well, you know, I'm sad to see it, to be honest with you. And Carl, and we were talking about this before the show, because he really did kind of, you know, he's not some guy that was given this on a platter. He worked hard. I mean, he's young, but he started young, and he worked hard to get where he is. It's kind of a shame to see it culminating in this.
Yeah, that's true, and that's all the more reason that he should wise up and say, hey, you know, this wasn't easy where I'm at, and why am I going to blow it on doing silly things and car racing that could end his life? You know, he's not showing himself as a very good role model, in my opinion, to all the teenagers out there that look up to him, you know, as far as this twizzle, whatever it is, this purple crap they drink, and you know. It's not good.
Hey, Sonny, this is Carl. Yeah, on the Justin Bieber issue, I agree with you. The funny thing is, I actually watched his documentary. I'm going to confess. I watched that with my daughter. And I was really impressed by the work that he put in, because he didn't seem to have it like a lot of other stars did. They showed him singing out on the streets at age 7, 8 and singing in churches and learning all these instruments and stuff like that. But it seems to say... It seems to speak to the fact that when young kids get a hold of such money and fame, no matter how they came up, it just doesn't seem as though they can handle it.
Even if they put a lot of work into doing it.
Yeah, their brains just don't seem to be ready to handle that type of responsibility and fame yet. What do you think about that?
Look how many child stars have had their lives ruined.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I have to agree. Obviously, I've had some personal experience in that arena at the age of 5, and to my humbleness, I was, you know, from fame, it took me right down. But I don't know what it is, I never let any amounts of money or any statue get to my head. But for him, you know, I can certainly understand of his surroundings, his peers, the guys around him, not mentioning any rappers out there.
Right,
you know,
right.
I mean, he's being led astray a little, and he's letting it happen because he is young.
Right.
But you know what? I don't think it's fair to not, you know, say, hey, he's not a kid. He's, what, 19,
right.
20 almost? So, I mean, he's old enough to say, hey, I got to stop this. You know, this isn't good.
Did you see what the little 8-year-old girl put out there? And she put a tweet out there, but it's kind of gone viral. She basically wrote an open letter to Justin Bieber and said, I'm, of course, paraphrasing, there are a lot of drunk people out there in the world, and you're just one of them.
Ooh.
Wow, that had to hit home. Ouch. Yeah, and that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, I have to agree. That's a smart little 8-year-old.
You got it. Now, Sonny, real quick, I have to ask you a question. We were actually giving away a calendar here from a constituent or something, and I wondered, do the Glow Girls have any calendars? Because I've been telling our audience, I would love to get my hands on your calendar.
I so wish we did have a Glow calendar, which we need.
What are these guys laughing for?
Yeah, get on that, would you?
I know. I'm actually trying to create one. I think we should. I don't know if everyone wants to see us all now, you know, calendar, but maybe back in the days, yeah.
No, you girls would be great.
Yeah, you know, but I think we need that, especially since, you know, if we're going into the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame is coming up a couple months, hopefully, you know.
Yeah.
We should have a calendar out. We should have mugs and T-shirts and everything, which hopefully we're doing that. A couple of us girls are. I, for one, hopefully will do this in the next month for tour. So
yeah.
You can look for Sunny T-shirts and mugs and stuff appearing out there. So
well,
a calendar, I think, is nearing there, and we will let you know.
And you can mix some of the younger girls and the older girls.
The audience here, I'm sure, would love to get their hands on some of those items. I know we would.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
Hey, Sonny, California is obviously always trying to lead the way, in particular when it comes to green ideas. And they've been going round and around with about plastic bags. And, of course, these are the bags we get in most shopping places now, and grocery stores sometimes still have the paper bags, but they, you know, mostly use the plastic bags. But California is talking about outlawing them?
Yes. California, it could become the nation's first state to ban single-use plastic bags. So, there was a compromise measure, I guess, that just passed this weekend. The last state Senate, Alex Padilla, sponsored Senate Bill 405, which would have phased out such bags at supermarkets, liquor stores, and pharmacies. You know, first of all, I can also say living downtown, we get these little plastic bags and all sorts of, like, trash litter down here in the beaches and the oceans. And I guess that's probably why they're doing this, for our save our environment. That's part of the green and the mammals in the ocean and the birds and the fish. It's quite dangerous, I guess, to my understanding. So... we're getting charged 10 cents out here for bags and paper bags as well in any establishment, any store. Leave it to Sonny. I'll go in, get all my groceries. They look at me like, do you have your bag? I'm like, as a matter of fact, I think I've got it, but... Oh, darn, it's in the car. You know, by that time, I'll just go ahead and charge me the 10 cents. What's the big deal? They're going to be racking up this 10 cents.
Here's the problem, Sonny. The flip side of this is that a lot of people use the bag that they bring in, the fabric bag that's designed for these groceries, but they don't wash them. And when you have raw meat and dozens of eggs in the bottom of your bag, you're going to get sick if you keep bringing food home like that.
Yeah.
No, that's just disgusting. I don't even agree with that fabric bag. So what they're doing now, which will hopefully bring more jobs, by the way, instead of losing jobs with this going out the window with the plastic bags, they're going to do a recycle on the bags and make them more durable and reusable.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's a wonderful idea. And let's see, the bill set for $2 million, aside from the workers, which they're going to bring in more workers for the recycling jobs, that's what they say. If the stipulate that is reusable bags contains at least 40% of, it has to, I should say, 40% of recyclable material. And it should be passed, they say, by no later than the year 2020.
Yeah.
And, that'll be also with a third-party certification of reusable plastic bags for California standards. So we can hope,
Let me ask you this. Okay. Sonny, had you heard that several major gun manufacturers are going to stop selling in California? Smith & Wesson is one of them. Because your state wants to put the stamp on bullets, on guns, et cetera, and they've said it was absolutely ridiculous. It is not going to help solve any crimes, and it's going to cost a fortune. So basically, they're just not going to sell their guns there.
I think you have some stuff on that, don't you, Sonny?
Right, I sure do, guys. You know, especially Smith & Wesson. They're not jumping on that. They said that Smith & Wesson does not and will not include micro-stamping in its firearms. A number of studies have indicated that micro-stamping is unreliable and serves no safety purpose. It is cost prohibitive and, most importantly, is not proven to aid in preventing of solving crimes or any of that nature. The micro-stamping mandate and the company's unwillingness to adopt this so-called technology will result in a diminishing number of Smith & Wesson guns. You know, so, I mean, that's not good.
Well, if I use a bullet that's stamped with somebody else, who are they going to go after? They're not going to go after me. They're going to go after the poor guy that I stole his bullets and I killed somebody with.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, it's, oh, goodness. We'll just ignore that call, guys. once I get to call in. Usually that never happens when I'm on with you guys because everybody knows I'm with the American Adversaries and the Bad Boys. They're like, we're not going to call, Sonny.
Tough guys are on the line.
Thank you,
sir. Right. Well, then, you know, I got to say, Smith & Wesson is a beautiful gun, and I was blessed to be raised with that weapon, if you will. My father, as the Express, was an officer and retired when I was around 5 or 6, but you know, he passed away in 88. My mother had the gun and offered that to me. Wow. So it was a big, heavy gun back then, guys. Nowadays, I mean, obviously they're made different, they're lighter weight, but you know, they still carry a bad impact or a good one in most cases.
Yeah, they still make the best revolver in the market. I mean, bar none, they still make the best revolver out there, even though they're lighter. The materials they use, they just do a great job with those guns.
Well, that's a very special firearm you have there, and great memories obviously go with it too. But it is a very effective weapon, as Carl was saying.
Oh, sure. Well, isn't that probably one of the oldest that I know, way before I was born. I mean, you know, Smith & Wesson has got to be the, you know, you guys know that. They're probably one of the oldest gun makers, right?
They've been around a long time, like Colt has.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Sonny, I know you have something special to attend tonight. Do you just want to give your friends a quick mention on the air?
Yes, absolutely. This goes out to Phil Jones and Cheryl Ledesti. Many blessings on their new wedding. And now we're going to their wedding party here local. They actually got married in another state, and they live in Sherman Oaks, California. So we're blessed to go there as friends and enjoy their time. And they're wonderful singers and great, great people. So the Grammys, I recorded, guys. I'm like, sorry, you know, friends before the music. You know, we can always watch the Grammys. That's what TiVo's for.
There you go. All right. Well, wish them the best of luck from us. And thanks a lot, Sonny. We love you. And we'll be talking to you next week.
Love you too, guys. Love you, Bad Boys. Be good out there.
All right. Send us that calendar.
Okay.
Thanks, Sonny.
It's going to be in the works.
I volunteered to do the photography. All right. All right. Have a great week. Thank you so much.
You too.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Okay, folks, you are listening to the American Adversaries. We still got, well, about 40 minutes to go, so don't go away.
Yeah, and you know what? That just makes me think, guys, we need an American Adversaries calendar. Come on, what do you think? Come on. These guys aren't buying it. We'll be back.
You can take it.
I hope you can take it for at least one more segment. Exactly what fun. Morgan's 3-hour tour of the American Adversaries. Dennis here with you. Christopher Hart, Larry Adams, Carl Jackson, Jeff sent us behind the board, Johnny Guns. It is for Larry Adams' closing comments. Take it away, Larry.
Thank you, Nostra D. That's like Nostra D. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Folks, I don't always name these little nuggets of discussion, but this one has a title I call The Harveys. Many olders out there remember the old was a film that helped the Jimmy Stewart convicted a seemingly befuddled gentleman as a slit rat named Harvey. No one could see or hear Harvey, including Erickson. There was insane. He would converse with a giant hare, set a place for him, and readily take the pukas as he would be. But, of course, could not beat it in the land of the lucid. The story where he was getting full info, committed to a mental institution, rugged to eradicate his best friend. The climax has a cab driver telling the family the insane that he is about to leave in Israel. I don't want to give a fast rap because I witnessed my own story. Gopping of the variety stores that all day to better the grill served us dog and soda and popcorn. I had to wait for someone, and the popcorn was fresh out of the pop, so I sat on one of the stools. But a small, bouncy, cheerful old man doting on next to him in a bag, as he seemed to have a familiar conversation with the young woman at the counter. She knew his name, complimented on how close he was to his bride of many years, and let him know the burger he had ordered would be right up. The old chap constantly chattered to his beloved tooths from the rack and appropriate plasticware for two. I sat there transfixed as the young woman set the burger and fries on the counter and did the gentleman's wife. Could tell she saw the glorious and wonderful closeness of these two elderly people.
Ah, the sandwich. One gal makes a grin on the cook's face. The nice man, her knife, gently toddled away. At that moment, the woman at the counter and I looked at each other. Her eyes were filling with tears. Even though she had witnessed this scene with the gentleman many times, it was a free. I understood. He said the order was either fine. The next in the plate, and massive had not left empty. The awful pain saw terrible things. But to some, the reality of the love greater than reality. I hope to God cure. Have a great day.
It's just true that.
Well, your reality.
Exactly. Versus reality. All right, folks, not out of time tonight. We got a few minutes left. We want to thank you for listening on AM 660, The Answer, the American Adversaries. Don't forget, coming up next, we'll be with Alarm Radio. It'll be 11 o'clock. And, of course, we'll be back here tomorrow. Fuck up, you know, our show. Don't cast a time to spend on me. Great place to spiff for that special someone. Labelers, of course, at the second and Larry Boulevard. If you're going east on I-4 Boulevard, they're right, missing the mess. And by the self, or something like that, that, too. So go on over to Lake Mary Jewelers. Check us looking for that type of for a Valentine's Day occasion. You can reach them at 407-8-6230. That's Lake Mary Jewelers at 407-8-6230. And Cafe Positano, play any in it. Banquet, Larry Taylor, just a year, great big old time.
Her 96th is coming up.
Yeah, she loves Rita's.
That's right.
Pasquale makes them special for my.
If you'd like to make a reservation, I don't think minutes to do that.
Brian,
but
he'll
look at the radio. But 77748, number 4788. Don't forget to keep listening to us and ask your friends to listen. And this thing up pretty soon. Here's some rules going
to
start.
Can I thank my hello sure to people? Absolutely. Yeah, Larry's able to give a speech before the Central Florida Mensa chapter.
All the smart people.
Yeah. Smart people.
Yeah, my friends, so, yes.
All my new smart friends promised to listen. The name of the speech was Why Talk Radio is Awesome, and I went through my history in radio. And I mentioned you got along with this other Rush and, you know, another guy. The real fun time, they didn't make me feel stupid just by being so smart. They were, you know, they clapped at all the right places, and they applauded, and they laughed in all the right spaces. And that's really to go with the real smears we have.
Hi, great job, Nostradamus.
12 jokes that make you sound like a genius. I'm not going to tell them all, but I'll tell one or two of them, okay? You ready?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. He's in. Is 0110.
I was going to say zero as easy as 1 2 3, but okay. I
1 0 1.
Okay, as one.
One walks into our team. So ask for them. Another Roman to two figures. Fives.
Ah, yeah, Romans.
Okay, this one. What would you be if you thought
dead?
Dead.
You say?
I like it. But it was a key. IKEA has published of
Here.
Done yet?
But, folks, you don't get on out of here. Stay with us. We got a couple minutes left, and Mark Walters is coming up. And if you're not into the Grammys and you're excited.
Mark jokes. Royal is going on.
Yeah. And Hacksaw Jim Duggan was part of the pre-show tonight.
Yep.
That's
a preview, though, isn't it?
Yeah. From my butt, Debbie coming to Orlando.
Orlando, Orlando, Orlando.
Next Saturday night, under the lights.
That's right. At Anna Dee Live. Sound and you'll hear a crowd and holler. That's great fun.
And with some gang.
Never know, never know. That is Saturday Live. Still tickets, but it's going to be fun. And you're sent to the press. It's going to be fun. It's great family fun, and it's the best deal in town in terms of sports entertainment. Bang for your buck. The Orlando Predators, you can get season tickets. That's a great package deal there. And you can go and call them at 407-844-44.
Do my eyes deceive me, Chris? You're filling out. You should try the that one you're looking
at. No, he's
look at
it.
Even better.
That long, makes sense.
As long as I get paid a living wage, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, yeah. What do they call it in production where the person in charge of the costumes?
Costumer.
Oh, that's what I want to be, the costumer.
You want to be the costumer for the cheerleaders.
For the Baldwin,
I know. 407-648-4048. Those seasons against Landers. You'll love us. 484. All right, everyone, I want to hear that all about.
Oh, no, no, nothing. Nothing at all. Okay. Pay no attention behind the microphone.
They're over here, as I'm
cheeking. They're over here just
okay, if you do it, don't forget tomorrow for American
Avenue. Watch their mouth out.
Not going to work.
Or going to we all clock at midnight.
Don't just send more. The clock's going to
finish you.
I heard it.
660. Pretty well spent on